You're tuned into More Living with Jim Brogan, broadcast live from the Brogan Financial Studios at News Talk 98.7, where old-fashioned values, expert knowledge, and genuine understanding come together to give you the retirement straight talk you deserve. Jim's a former National Advisor of the Year recipient and a financial educator, and he's here today to talk about how you can live out the best years of your life. Jim and the Brogan Financial team have been helping retirees and pre-retirees across the Southeast for over 20 years in their pursuit of financial independence. You can reach them during the week at 865-862-6800. So sit back, relax, and get ready to learn, because More Living with Jim Brogan starts now.
Hello, East Tennessee. Welcome to More Living with Jim Brogan, where it's all about living the best years of your life your way. As you listen to News Talk 98.7 WOKI, and you know, you've worked hard to build your financial foundation, saving for retirement, building wealth, planning for the future. But all that progress can be undone by avoidable mistakes, from whether it's inadequate insurance coverages to outdated beneficiary designations, from sophisticated scams targeting retirees to emergency funds that aren't quite adequate for today's challenges. These gaps in your financial plan that are often overlooked can derail decades of careful work. Now, the good news is most of these problems are preventable with the right knowledge and proactive planning. And so today, we're discussing four critical areas where even well-planned finances can fall apart: insurance coverages, beneficiary designations and how we title our assets, fraud and scam prevention, and how we handle our emergency fund. So let's dive into how to protect the plan that you've worked so hard to build. We'll answer common questions about protecting your financial plan, and we'll discuss solutions to help you avoid the mistakes that can derail even the best laid plans. So let's start with an insurance review and covering or closing your coverage gaps before they end up costing you. You know, insurance is one of those things we all have, but few of us really review it regularly. You know, we set it and forget it, and we hope we never need it. You know, we don't hope to have a claim on our homeowner's insurance, as an example. However, insurance markets have changed dramatically in recent years, and what worked for you 5 years ago, or even last year for that matter, may no longer provide adequate protection. You know, we see soaring premiums. There are expiring subsidies in terms of the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, or the Obamacare, as it's commonly called. And there are coverage gaps many don't know exist. Today's insurance landscape does need your attention. So let's discuss today why reviewing your insurance coverage is critical in 2026. So first off, let's talk about health insurance. The Enhanced Affordable Care Act subsidies expired at the end of 2025, and average premiums more than doubled from just under $900 a month to over $1,900 per month for people that are receiving a government subsidy. About 7.3 million people are expected to drop their ACA coverage that they get in the marketplace. 5 million people will likely go uninsured rather than find coverage somewhere else. And young, healthy people dropping coverage creates a potential death spiral for the marketplace. I mean, think about this. It's often younger, healthier people that drop their coverage. And that makes it, you know, the older and more sick a population is that's being covered for insurance, the higher those costs are. You know, insurance is about the law of large numbers. When you start taking out younger, healthier people, it completely changes that dynamic. And then when you have more people going off of insurance, then we have more people uninsured that go into emergency rooms, that have accidents, that have things that come up, and ultimately that creates stress on our healthcare system. Now, other insurances are rising. Auto insurance premiums were up 12% in 2025. And that was more than 50% higher than they were in 2020. So in five short years, auto insurance has gone up over 50%. Full coverage auto insurance increased for the average household almost $2,700 a year. 47% of homeowners reported a premium increase in 2025. And rate increases are happening at really a record pace, things we haven't really seen in decades. So, you know, health insurance, let's start with health insurance premiums. Health insurance premiums for employer coverage reached $27,000 for family coverage, $27,000 a year. So that's pretty dang high. Nearly 30% of policyholders switched carriers in the past 5 years. Comparison shopping allows an apples-to-apples policy comparison. Now, you know, if you're working for an employer, most people, they're covered for through their health insurance, you know, through their employer. And so you don't have a lot of control over those things. Now, if you do have control, you should absolutely be shopping your health insurance on a regular basis. You should also look at payment options. You know, sometimes paying for your premium annually instead of monthly can yield some pretty deep discounts. But we have to also understand where policies exclude things. You know, Medicare doesn't cover everything. That's a very common thing. Most people cover their gaps with either a Medigap plan or Medicare Advantage plan. So people get supplements. And there are still holes depending on which supplement you get. You know, travel insurance, many people buy travel insurance, especially when they, you know, we have a lot of clients that go on overseas trips, go on river cruises in Europe, things like that. And travel insurance, it has a lot of exclusions that people don't really understand. So it's critically important if we're going to pay for insurance to understand what we're paying for. You know, long-term care insurance has become more and more expensive. And in many cases, it's just unavailable. So we really should be looking at all of these things and what coverage covers and what it doesn't cover. I know, you know, with things like homeowners insurance, one thing I've learned over the last 4 or 5 years is insurers are terrified of water damage. And so there are typically limits on your coverage as what those benefits will cover if there's water damage or if there's mold and mildew damage. There are a lot of exclusions. With your auto insurance, and I'm not a licensed insurance agent for auto and homeowners, so let's be clear here. But with your auto insurance, you know, do you have a gap in your coverage if you buy a brand new car and you drive it off the lot? You know, it goes down $10,000 in value oftentimes, or let's say significantly, depending on, you know, how you know, the value of the car you bought. But then if you turn around and have a significant accident, you may not have enough coverage to cover that. There could be a gap in what the insurance company thinks the car is worth versus what you just paid for it. You know, if you have significant damage to your car, will your insurance company pay to replace parts that are made by your OEM, your original equipment manufacturer? Or are they going to use cheaper aftermarket parts? So all of these things are important, and these are all conversations you should be having with your insurance agent. What is covered? What is not covered? What limitations are there for things like flooding, water damage, all kinds of things? So this is just really important to consider. You know, insurance provides a foundation for financial security. And when you're uninsured, a single unexpected event, whether it be a healthcare crisis, if it be property damage, a liability claim. You know, if you're sued, you get in a car accident, or somebody gets injured at your home, it can wipe out years of savings. And when you're paying for coverage you don't need, you're wasting money that could be working harder elsewhere. So the insurance landscape has changed dramatically over the past 5 or 6 years. There have been premium increases, changes in the subsidies under the Affordable Care Act, coverage modifications that may have created gaps in your protection, like water damage and things like that. So, you know, you need to perform regular comprehensive insurance reviews at least every couple of years to ensure that you have the right coverage at the right price. And honestly, every year when your insurance renews is a great time to be talking to your insurance agent about these kind of things. So I do want to just mention before we end the discussion about insurance, about liability. You know, let's talk about our car insurance in particular. You know, we have limits on our car insurance. And what if you get sued for more than that limit? You know, umbrella policies that then kick in. An umbrella is like a policy that then kicks in if your coverage limits are not adequate enough. So, for example, you might have a $1 million umbrella. And that umbrella covers liability, it covers all kinds of things, in addition to damage, actual damages. So a liability protection is just not that expensive. And adding that, or considering adding that to your homeowner's policy, is typically not very much money. So we definitely need to make sure that we have adequate insurance to protect us if we have the unthinkable happen. So every year when your policies renew, talk to your insurance agent. You know, be sure you're shopping around periodically from time to time. I'm a big fan of independent agents because they can write business with multiple companies. Now, some of these captive agents that only work for one insurance company, many of those are very good as well. So don't get me wrong, but I am a fan of independent agents that can represent multiple companies and can truly consult, be a consultant for you in helping you through these kinds of decisions. Now, we're going to get to our first break. When we come back, we're going to discuss how outdated beneficiary designations can completely derail your estate plan. We'll also talk about asset titling and understanding the way we title our assets and what that means in our estate plan and what it does not mean in our estate plan. So stay with us. This is More Living with Jim Brogan right here on News Talk 98.7 WOKI.
Welcome back to News Talk 98.7's Brogan Financial Studios, where Jim Brogan is coming to you live with important news and advice to help you achieve your dream retirement. Get ready to learn and live. Here's your host, Jim Brogan.
Welcome back to More Living here on News Talk 98.7 WOKI. It's a beautiful, beautiful weekend here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Let's talk about beneficiary designations and asset titling. You know, we how we title our assets, how we name beneficiaries, we see horror stories every year about estate planning disasters and understanding what covers what. Or better yet, you know, what does your will not cover? You've taken time to create a will or trust. You spell out exactly how you want your assets distributed. And you think your estate plan is complete, but there is a silent killer lurking in many estate plans, and that's outdated beneficiary designations and improperly titled assets. You know, these seemingly minor details can completely override your carefully crafted will or your living trust, sending your assets to unintended recipients and potentially creating family conflict that lasts for years. Today, we'll explore why beneficiary designations matter so much and how to avoid some common mistakes with both beneficiary designations and how we title our assets. So it's important to understand beneficiary designations have full control and authority over who gets what for that account. They override your will and your trust. And the most common would be our retirement accounts. When you open up a retirement account, an IRA or a 401k at work, on the account form it asks you to name a beneficiary. And we typically don't think anything about it. We just list our spouse if we're married, and then we list our kids maybe as contingent beneficiaries. Now, one benefit of beneficiary designations is where when you name a beneficiary on an account or on life insurance or, you know, anything like that, those assets pass directly to the named beneficiaries, and they bypass probate. And in many ways, that is a good thing. But it does create complications because we put a lot of legal language in our will, and that legal language is in there for a reason. It's very, very important. It covers a lot of different things, like what if people don't die in the right order? That's a very common problem we see is you name your kids as, you know, your beneficiaries. Well, what if one of them predeceases you? I mean, knock on wood. But then who gets their share of the asset? Well, you'd like to think it would go to any grandchildren you have. But in most cases, it goes to the other surviving siblings. So many people come into our office, and that's how they've named their beneficiaries. And if people don't die in the right order, they could end up disinheriting an entire arm of the family. And then we see common errors like post-divorce retention. You know, many cases the ex-spouses are still listed as the beneficiary despite a divorce years ago. And this was actually tried. It was challenged in the court system and went all the way to the Supreme Court because a husband and wife had gotten a divorce and the husband changed all, he got the retirement accounts. The wife got other assets like the house. And the husband, the ex-husband changed his benefit, all his wills and legal documents, but he never changed the beneficiary designation on his 401k. And years later, he died, and his ex-wife was the primary beneficiary. Now, then his daughter was the contingent beneficiary. Well, clearly, the goal, the plan, was for him to get the retirement accounts. He redid his legal planning. But the beneficiary designation listed the ex-spouse. And his daughter sued her own mother. And it went all the way to the Supreme Court. Then the Supreme Court, I think it was 9-0. It might have been 8-1, but I think it was 9-0. Clean sweep, beneficiary designation, beneficiary priority rules. That is the law of the land. So this is something, you know, what if you get remarried? You know, what if you were in a second marriage and you have a 401k and you get remarried and you've named your kids are named as your primary beneficiary. Well, under the law, once you're married for a year, your spouse has an automatic right to that retirement account under ERISA law, which governs 401ks. And so what that means is if you leave your kids as the beneficiary without getting a waiver from your spouse, which is what is required, then your spouse is legally entitled to your retirement account. Okay, so that's also a very, very important thing to understand with beneficiary designations. Many people, they miss contingent beneficiaries. You know, you name primary, you don't name contingents. And if your primary beneficiary predeceases you, then your assets could end up going into probate, go into your estate, and triggering potential extra taxes if it's a retirement account. If you name a minor child directly, you know, it could subject beneficiaries to costly guardian proceedings. If you name the estate as the beneficiary, it forces assets into probate, which negates probate avoidance benefits of naming beneficiaries. So all of these things are very, very critically important. Now, so your beneficiary designations must align with your overall estate plan. You know, a common plan is to leave assets to a spouse, and then when you're gone, leave it to a testamentary trust for minor children. And that's a very common thing because then you can say who's going to be over that testamentary trust. A testamentary trust is simply a trust that's created when you pass away, if it goes to a minor child, and you appoint a trustee to be over that trust and you lay out the guidelines of how the minor beneficiary can get money from the trust, whether it's principal, earnings, income, whatever it is. And when you do that, it creates a lot more clarity If you name minor children or minor grandchildren as contingent beneficiaries directly, it can create a lot of problems because a minor child typically cannot inherit that money. And so a court would then have to come in and appoint somebody to be over that money for that minor child. And so it can negate a carefully planned trust structure. Now, how we title our assets is also very, very important. Many of you listening today have created a living trust, and you created that living trust with the idea that you would put your house and real property in the trust, and by doing that, you effectively avoid probate. See, the only way in Tennessee to get assets to your kids without probate is to put it in a living trust. Now, I say that, you could put your child's name on a house, and that would, if it's jointly titled, that would go directly to your child with no probate. The problem with that is you will have made a gift. Are you inside the gift limitations of what IRS allows without filing an estate gift return, tax return? And then you've also put your child's name on your house. What if your child is in a car accident and gets sued? Well, they could take your house. So there's gifting issues with that. There's also liability and exposure issues. We were talking about insurance coverages in the first segment. These are all things and risks that you can be exposed to. So, you know, the only way you really shouldn't put your kids' names on your house. So the only way, if you don't do that, the only way to get real property to your kids without probate is to put it in living trust. But just listing the house or the property in the name of the or in the trust document does not actually put it in the trust. And that's a very common misconception we see all the time. What matters is if I go down to the courthouse and I pull the deed to your property, which is a public record, what is the title going to be? What is it on your house? Is it Jim Brogan? Or is it the Jim Brogan Living Trust? If it says Jim Brogan, and yet I've got this trust document that says it's in the trust, it ain't in the trust. If I go down and pull that deed to the property, if it's not titled into the trust, it is not in the trust. So again, all of these things are critically important. So beneficiary designations can override your will and trust. Assets do pass directly to named beneficiaries, and that allows you to bypass probate, but they don't have nearly as much legal language, and they don't cover things like what if people die in the wrong order. So, they're simple forms, beneficiary designations are, that have enormous power, and a single outdated form can send hundreds of thousands or even millions of dollars to the wrong person, completely overriding the estate plan that you spent time and money creating. And these are not rare mistakes. These are painful surprises that families discover only after someone has passed away and it's too late to fix it. So as a financial professional, you know, our job at Brogan Financial is to help clients conduct comprehensive beneficiary designation reviews, make sure that they do line up with the with the legal instructions in wills and trusts to ensure every account aligns with your overall estate planning. So whether you've experienced a divorce, a remarriage, a birth of a child, or you simply haven't reviewed these beneficiary designations in years, we can help you avoid the mistakes that can derail your legacy. So come sit down with us. It won't cost you anything. We'll take time to do a complimentary consultation, and we'll look at your beneficiary designations. Because, and that's the other thing, oftentimes attorneys don't do beneficiary designations. They depend on you to do that. Oftentimes I have found that attorneys will write, they'll give you instructions of what to do with your beneficiary designations, but then they don't absolutely make sure that you implement those beneficiary changes. So all of this is critically important when it comes to estate planning. Beneficiary designations, how you title your property, very, very important. Now, when we come back, I'm going to get into fraud and scam prevention and how you can protect your wealth for criminals. We'll also talk about our upcoming class, tax planning in retirement, which is this coming Thursday at Pellissippi State. I'll have more information about that when we come back. You're listening to More Living with Jim Brogan right here on News Talk 98.7 WOKI.
Welcome back to News Talk 98.7's Brogan Financial Studios, where Jim Brogan is coming to you live with important news and advice to help you achieve your dream retirement. Get ready to learn and live. Here's your host, Jim Brogan.
Thanks for tuning in this week to More Living with Jim Brogan, where it's all about living the best years of your life your way. This is News Talk 98.7 WOKI, and we're with you every Saturday, 9 to 10 a.m., and again from 3 to 4 p.m. I want to invite you to the class I'm teaching at Pellissippi State Community College through their Community Outreach and Adult Education Programs. It's this coming Thursday night, Tax Planning, Taxes in Your Retirement. And I can't tell you how important I think this issue is. You know, we passed the One Big Beautiful Bill last year. It did make the tax cuts from the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act permanent. But you know what? Only in the sense that Congress is permanent. You know, it does take a law change to change our current tax structure, but that happens, right? And when you look at our current fiscal outlook, we just have a math problem. It's unsustainable with the levels of debt, entitlement programs, the unfunded liabilities for Medicare prescription drugs, all of these things. We know Social Security at some point has got to be revamped somewhat. So tax rates are very likely to be higher in the future. And I think it's important to understand the history of our income tax system, understand how our tax system works, how marginal brackets work, and how you can pay less tax over the rest of your lifetime. You know, one of the things that we talk about sometimes is, can you live in a 0% tax bracket in retirement? And the answer is, many people can. Well, everybody could, but, you know, if you've got a good bit of your wealth in qualified retirement accounts like 401ks, and you're 60 years old, you know, money coming out of those plans is going to be fully taxable. And, you know, you can do Roth conversion, but that does create an upfront tax cost. And in many cases, people should do that, or at least should consider it. But, you know, you're not going to do a $1 million Roth conversion. Most people are not going to do that because of the upfront tax cost. So now, younger folks, you can absolutely be structuring things to effectively pay little to no tax when you're retired. So we're going to get into all of that in my class, the Tax Planning in Retirement. It's this Thursday. It's a one-night class in 2 hours. I want to cover as much information as I can about tax planning, both now and in the future. You can find out more information. Go to brogantaxplan.com. You can click on to download a syllabus, and you can click a button to register directly with Pellissippi State. Again, it's Thursday night, 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. We'd love to have you there. BroganTaxPlanning.com. You can get more information. Let's dive into fraud and scam prevention. We're talking about avoidable mistakes. In the first segment, we talked about insurance coverages and gaps and what does it cover, what does it not cover, and understanding the fine print in insurance policies. And in the second segment, we talked about beneficiary designations, how we title our assets. Many times, because of how our assets are titled and we name beneficiaries, our wills and trusts don't even govern those assets. And so we got to understand how the law works on those things. Let's talk about fraud and scam prevention and how you can protect your wealth from criminals. You know, financial fraud targeting older adults has frankly reached crisis levels. In 2024 alone, older Americans lost up to $81.5 billion, with a B, billion dollars to scams and fraud, and the numbers are only growing. And these aren't just statistics, because behind every dollar lost is a real person who worked their entire life to build financial security only to see it vanish in days or even in hours. And the sophistication of modern scams, especially when we combine with technology like AI-generated voice, social media targeting, It makes everyone vulnerable. And so today, let's discuss a little bit how to recognize and prevent the most common scams that can threaten your financial security. So reported fraud losses for adults 60 and over in 2024 was estimated to be $2.4 billion, and that was up 26% from 2023 in 1 year. But real losses are estimated to be anywhere from $10 to $81 billion due to underreporting. There's a lot of fraud that goes on that people never report. Individual losses of $100,000 or more. So think about this, where an individual, one single family, loses $100,000 or more. That accounted for $1.6 billion, which was 68% of the total of the fraud we know about in 2024. And the losses of $100,000 or more increased almost tenfold from 2020 to 2024. Then we also see the most damaging types of scams. We see investment scams, $744 million in losses. Those are the most financially damaging, or investment scams. How do you recognize an investment scam? I think that can be more and more difficult in today's world. It's one of the reasons I'm a fan of publicly traded securities. Because when you get into private placements that are not publicly traded, there are a lot of legitimate good things out there that are worth consideration for high net worth individuals in order to put your money in a private placement or a private investment. You typically have to be considered a high net worth investor, and there are rules for that. But there are a lot of legitimate things out there. Probably one of the most common would be private real estate trusts or REITs. But regardless of what the private offering is, you know, there's oftentimes a lot more due diligence that needs to be done to make sure that it's not either a scam, or, you know, it might have been legitimate in the past, but somebody starts embezzling money. You know, you don't have the same kind of public reporting requirements. You know, many times when that happens, it's called a pyramid or a Ponzi scheme. In many cases, it's just owners or executives that are just embezzling and stealing money from these private placements. So you just have to be careful. As a rule, we like to stick with publicly traded things. I do want to, again, be clear, that doesn't mean that private placements are not good or that there aren't good things out there. They just, when you look at those things, they have to be very, very thoroughly vetted. We see imposter scams where we see criminals pose as a bank or Amazon or Microsoft. In many cases, imposters pose as Social Security. Or they pose as the Federal Trade Commission, the FTC. So when we get emails and texts, we got to be very, very careful. What is the source of this email or this text? You know, romance scams can be particularly devastating for widows, widowers, people who are recently divorced. In many cases, the scammer will ask for more money, or they'll ask for money before meeting someone. You know, they meet online, they meet with social media or in dating apps, and they want money before they meet. There are certainly tech support scams out there where older adults, frankly, are disproportionately affected, where you have tech problems and you need help. There can be government impersonations, especially with things like Medicare, the IRS, local police even, and imposters, and grandparent scams. With AI, voices can be cloned, and it makes these especially convincing that you're hearing from your grandchild and they're in trouble and they need help. So it's a good idea whenever you're contacted about things that might sound like they're urgent, it's always a good idea to call the numbers that you know are real and verify. If you have a grandchild supposedly calling you that's in a difficult spot, call them directly on their phone, or call their parent or someone else, call their spouse if they're an adult child that's married. If it's an email that you got and it's about your credit card, instead of calling the number in the email, call the number that's on your credit card itself, where you know that number is legitimate. So typically, some of the warning signs for these kind of scams is when you get contacted out of the blue from an unknown source. Typically, there's going to be a sense of urgency. You know, you have to act immediately. Many times, they use a lot of fear tactics. If you don't do this, this bad thing's going to happen immediately. If you're requested for payments via a gift card or cryptocurrency, certainly cash. If you're asked to wire transfer money from your account to an account that doesn't have your name on it, all of those things are warning signs. If you're contacted and the claim is you must decide right now to pay something, again, that's that urgency. Oftentimes, that's going to be a scam. If you're asked to keep a transaction secret from your family, that's a huge red flag. Certainly, too good to be true investment returns. That can be dangerous. And many times, you know, when we saw with Bernie Madoff, now it's been quite a while now since that big pyramid scheme, but one of the things Bernie Madoff did is he provided returns that were good and consistent, but not so alarming they would raise a lot of flags. His clients, they clicked along making around 11% per year, which is a very good return regardless of market conditions. So he didn't play into the greed of making 20%, but it was an attractive return that people thought they could depend on. So, you know, financial fraud can destroy decades of careful planning in a matter of days. And the criminals behind these are more and more sophisticated. They're patient. They're ruthless. They exploit trust. They create urgency, and they use technology to make their schemes nearly impossible to distinguish from legitimate communications. Awareness is your first line of defense. Understanding how these scams work, recognizing the warning signs, and having safeguards in place that can protect you and your family. You know, you should be monitoring your credit regularly. You can do credit monitoring. You can do credit freezes, credit warnings, all kinds of things that you can do. So, you know, this is important stuff. It's becoming more and more prevalent in the world we live in. So protecting yourself from frauds and scams, very, very important that you don't unwittingly lose potentially hundreds of thousands of dollars overnight. We're going to get to our last break. When we come back, we're going to talk about your emergency fund and your debt strategy. How can you build a financial safety net so that you don't have things come up that derail years and years of planning? So stay with us. This is More Living with Jim Brogan here on News Talk 98.7 WOKI.
Welcome back to News Talk 98.7's Brogan Financial Studios, where Jim Brogan is coming to you live with important news and advice to help you achieve your dream retirement. Get ready to learn and live. Here's your host, Jim Brogan.
Thanks for listening to More Living here on News Talk 98.7 WOKI. Check us out online at BroganFinancial.com. We got a world of resources, wealth of information there to help you make informed and prudent decisions that can truly impact the quality of your life. My next class, Tax Planning and Retirement, is this coming Thursday. It is through Pellissippi State's Community Outreach Adult Education. It's a one-night class. I think the fee is it's either $39 or $49 to Pellissippi State. For more information, you can go to Brogan Tax Planning, B-R-O-G-A-N, BroganTaxPlanning.com. You can download a syllabus, and then you can click and register to register directly with Pellissippi State. It's 6:30 this coming Thursday. You know, life can throw curveballs, job losses, medical emergencies, home repairs, family crises. These are unexpected events and expenses that can derail even the most carefully planned budget. The difference between a financial setback and a financial catastrophe often comes down to one thing: whether you have an adequate emergency fund. But recent data shows that roughly 3 in 10 Americans have more credit card debt than they do emergency savings, and that leaves them to very vulnerable when life gets turbulent. So we'll discuss how to build and maintain an emergency fund that actually protects you and how to balance emergency savings with debt management. So many households still haven't rebuilt emergency funds that they've used in recent economic disruptions. Only 18% of Americans increased their emergency savings in 2025. 18%, 1/8. 27% of those who withdrew from emergency savings used their funds for non-essentials, vacations, discretionary shopping. An emergency fund is things ideally that are emergencies. Now, for people or unexpected events. Now, as you get older and you get into retirement, I would say large purchases as well. Those people who increase savings are 4 times more likely to have increased household earnings. That makes sense, right? As you make more money, you can create more emergency savings. Now, the standard recommendation that you always hear is 3 to 6 months of essential living expenses. And I think that's a good rule of thumb, especially for those of you younger that are still working. But, you know, when we're retired, that type of thinking just doesn't, I don't know that that holds water, because when we're retired, we're not thinking in terms of how many months can I pay my bills if I were to lose my job. We don't have earned income when we're retired. So I think a good rule of thumb is to think about whatever your entire investment base is 5 to 10% of that being in emergency savings. And I'm talking about liquid investment reserves. I'm not talking about real estate. If you have significant real estate, I'm talking about liquid investment reserves, marketable securities that can be traded. Now, a starting target for young folks would be $500. I'm also a fan of a laddered approach with your emergency savings. Maybe you have 1 month of savings, 1 month of expenses in a savings account, and then the next few months you have in a high-yield savings. And if you've got a good 6 months of emergency savings, maybe, you know, money you might not would need for 4 to 6 months, you might have in CDs where you've been able to lock in a rate for 6 months. High-yield savings are still, in many cases, paying over 4%, but certainly in the threes. Accounts are FDIC insured up to $250,000 per institution, per depositor. So I do think that's important to keep an eye on, is FDIC insurance. Money market accounts many times offer some pretty nice rates. So I think one good rule of thumb is to automate deposits if you're still working. Automate deposits on a monthly basis can have meaningful, even $50 or $100 a month can have can really build meaningful benefits over time. If you have higher education expenses, certainly, you might need more emergency savings, you know, if you've got kids in college or getting ready to go to college. Now, believe it or not, younger folks, Gen Z, post-millennials, are the most likely demographic now to increase their savings, which is a great thing for young people today. So focus on the single most important financial priority. Don't try to tackle everything together. It's hard to pay off debt and credit card debt and build substantial emergency savings at the same time. Get something saved, $1,000. Then you can start paying off debt. Then once you do that, start building those emergency savings to 3 to 6 months expenses. So set a target and have a strategy for getting there. Certainly, as you approach retirement, your emergency savings, it helps protect all of the rest of your investment. So you don't have things come up where you have to sell an investment at the wrong time. What if the market is sharply down? You don't want to have to sell a CD early. So having emergency savings is a critical component of a financial plan. Today, we've discussed avoidable mistakes because greater wealth provides for more living so you can live the best years of your life your way. Thanks for tuning in. Thank you to Wayne for engineering the show. Thank you to Mary Caroline for helping produce the show. Have a very, very blessed weekend. You've been listening to More Living with Jim Brogan right here on News Talk 98.7 WOKI.
The views expressed by Jim Brogan and his guests are not that of Cumulus Media. Any discussion of financial, legal, and tax planning strategies is not intended to be individualized advice and is general in nature. Always consult with your advisor for advice specific to your needs. This program's content does not represent a recommendation of any particular security, strategy, or investment by Jim Brogan or Brogan Financial Incorporated.